wish life was like more forgiving in the department where I should bring more to the table. I wish I was able. What can I do? The things I want to do. The things I want to do.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of Stress, Depressed, and Anxious with your host, Local Neighborhood Baby. So today, I am talking about something that I have kind of been going back and forth on whether I even wanted to talk about it or was ready to talk about it or not. It's so weird because it weighs so heavily on me, and I think that things that weigh heavily on me usually make me happy to express them on this show. However, I don't know, something about this kind of felt so pathetic and overdone and common, and I don't know, I just kept going back and forth in my mind on whether or not I wanted to talk about it, but here I am. Because I feel that I should. And yeah. So today's topic, and sorry to keep you in suspense, is about my father. Dear old dad. And yeah, I'm going to tell you guys the story of how my father abandoned me and, you know, subsequently my siblings and my mom, my family, and how it's affected me since then, I guess. So first things first, we'll start at the very beginning. My mother and father got married under some weird circumstances. Not so much weird as like almost cinematic in a way. My mother was dating someone who she was really in love with. And when it came time for them to get married, my mom and her entire family were part of a religion. And in order for her to get married to this guy who wasn't in the same religion as her, he would have to convert. And basically, when it came down to, you know, converting, he just said that if that was what, you know, their marriage was dependent on, then he, you know, he guessed he would never get married. And so they kind of were at an impasse, and my mother was just like, well, if you don't want to convert, then we're not getting married. And so it was kind of a crazy situation. So he kind of called her bluff and was like, you know, upset about the whole situation, obviously, and tried to call her bluff and was like, oh, whatever. Like, it's not like you're going to get married to anyone else, you know, who's going to marry you, whatever. Just being an asshole, you know, trying to call her bluff. So my mother, who I guess was really strong-willed and upset and angry at the time, set out to prove him wrong. So she told one of her friends, which happened to be my father's cousin, she told one of her friends, hey, look, I'm looking for a guy, a nice guy to get married to. Do you know anyone? And she said, yeah, I know a couple people, actually. And long story short there, my father showed up and, you know, him and my mother started to date. But there was, in fact, a plot twist.
And before you hear about the plot twist, just a brief interruption to the episode. I am doing this on every episode this year, promoting a different TwiPods winning podcast, and that is in reference to the awards that we did at the close of 2020. This podcast was nominated as the best in its category, voted by other podcasters as well as podcast lovers. So please listen to this promo, and if you like what you hear, go ahead and check them out.
Are you looking for a new adventure? Did you ever want to visit the city where all your nightmares reside? Well, you're in luck. Join us, your tour guides, Christine and Jen, to visit Nopeville, where you will be personally escorted on an all-inclusive trip through the city and see all possibilities of terror and fright.
You'll see all sorts of things on your tours, including, but definitely not limited to, the paranormal, true crime, the supernatural, and more. If you're into all that and enjoy a little dark humor, book your tour today and nope right along with us. Check us out on our website at nopevillepodcast.com to see where you can listen to Nopeville today.
The plot twist was that my mother was actually pregnant, and she had no real intention of marrying my father, basically. Like, she was just kind of doing it to show her ex, who she was, you know, in love with, that, you know what, yeah, I can move on and I can get other guys, obviously, and just, you know, kind of calling his bluff in a way. So of course he was kind of drooling over her and, you know, saying he was sorry and that he would convert and begging to come back. And she was like, no, because now I know that if you convert, it would just be only for the purpose of getting me back. And it was just this whole rigmarole. But she was with my father, no real serious intentions to be with him. And then boom, it turns out that she's pregnant. And her parents were like, well, now you have to get married. And she did not want to get married. She was not 100% sure that, the time frame on the pregnancy was, you know, to a point where it could have been for my father, or it could have been for her ex, whom she was in love with. So her parents were like, you have to get married to the father of this baby. Like, there's no, we don't do things like this in our family. Like, you have to get married. And suffice it to say that she went to court to get married 3 times, and all 3 times she walked away, you know, at the, you know, once they get to the point of saying I do. And she just didn't want to marry my father. However, she was also so, like, dead set on not going back and marrying her ex as well. So anyways, conclusion came that she finally just buckled up and married my father under extreme pressure from her parents. And then she had my brother, and that was that. So their relationship was tumultuous, to say the least. Obviously, my father said that he was in love with her. I get the sense that they were basically living 2 different lives, and he wanted to capitalize off of that. That's just my own personal opinion from everything that I've seen and everything that I've heard and all the different points of views of this story. He was pretty much poor, you know, not like completely poor, but just like not doing quite well for himself. He was living with his sister at the time where he met my mother, whereas she was this big, you know, successful woman working in Manhattan, making a lot of money, being able to take care of herself, and had all her shit together, basically, and was like, you know, super hot, you know, whatever. So she had it all going on, and she came from a really affluent family who, you know, did very well for themselves. They all, you know, had pretty high education, and they all had property, and they were a really well-to-do family as compared to his family that was the basically complete opposite of that. So I think that he saw an opportunity there, and it made a lot of sense in the end to me, because somebody who goes to court with you to get married 3 times and says no all 3 times and is like in tears, you would think that you would not want to marry that person. But I don't know, it just kind of came together for me as I got a little older. that he saw an opportunity there. So anyways, they were married. They had my brother, and then I was the second child, and then they had my sister. So I'm a middle child, which might explain a lot. I don't know. Middle child blues, right? But yeah, growing up, my father was the kind of person that did not like to take responsibility for anything. He wanted more than anything. I mean, his dream position in life would be to be a stay-at-home dad. He did not want to work. He was always quitting all of his jobs. He'd work for like 6 months out of the year, and then he would stop working and stay home. Whereas my mom was more of like a workaholic type. She was like, she's Virgo. She's like workaholic. She's a socialite. He was like wanting to stay home and sleep kind of guy. Wasn't much of a social person at all. They're like complete opposites in a lot of respects. And he was like lazy. She was like not lazy. It was just two different people with two different mind states. And growing up, they butted heads a lot about a lot of things because they didn't agree on a lot of things. Especially when it came to financial things, he was kind of a more live for today type of person. And she was not that kind of person. She wanted to plan for the future, but that wasn't his MO. And not to say my mom is blameless. I don't want to characterize her as blameless, in any way, but, yeah, I'm just telling you from the beginning. So that was kind of how it went growing up, or how I saw them, you know, as I grew up, just two people on two different pages and from two different walks of life trying to come together. And it just was Clash of the Titans sometimes in the household. And sometimes it got, you know, really tense. My father was, he always felt like other people should help him do the things that he wants to do. He always felt like everything should be free. He didn't want to work for what he had. He thought he deserved a lot of things and he complained a lot about everything that he had to do in terms of, you know, his responsibilities. He didn't want responsibilities. It was something that he said over and over and over again. Even said many, many times that he regretted having children because it was just like this big responsibility that he didn't want. Even though he wanted, my mom didn't want to have more children, and he, you know, was like, I want to have more children, and they kept having more children, you know, after my brother and then me and then my sister, like, they, you know, they kept having more children because he wanted to have children at the time. And I think that was more of a thing of possibly in my mind of just wanting to make sure, like, okay, you know, every time you're going to leave me, we have another kid. So it just solidifies that you're going to stick around. I think that was more what it was about, if I look at the full picture frame, but it was to say for sure, he wanted kids. She wanted to stop having kids, so much so that after my sister, she had her tubes tied. And as the story goes, he was pissed off at her. He didn't even come to, you know, the surgery. She had to get a friend to come and take care of her afterwards because he was so pissed about it. Because she had her tubes tied because he wanted more children, but he also at the same time didn't want to work. And it just, you know, a lot of it just didn't make sense. So he didn't want to actually be responsible, but he wanted more children. So it's weird. And then later, you know, told us all the time that like he regretted having children. And he was always talking about leaving the family. Like it was something so constant that he said all the time that it wasn't until after he actually abandoned our family that I, you know, had some time to reflect and think about all the times growing up, like literally as far back as I can remember, which I can remember to about 4 or 5, like constantly hearing him say that he wanted to leave. You know, I want to leave. And my mom being like, then go. And, you know, just being this back and forth thing. But he always talked about wanting to leave and not wanting these responsibilities. And he was always complaining about it, that it became like background noise to me. Like it wasn't even hurtful at the time, because it was like so regular to hear him say, you know, those things all the time. It was like some kind of almost like a joke. But that wasn't actually a joke. So weird to say, but so true. And anyways, as we grew older, obviously, you know, he definitely became more and more like he didn't want any responsibilities. Even when, in terms of like, you know, the family moving, like he wanted to move around. I remember, you know, growing up, we were around his family more, and he wanted to move around my mother's family so that they could help, because he felt like they had more money. So he thought that, like, by moving to the same state as them and, like, being around them, that they would, like, he would somehow benefit financially. And, you know, when he found out that that also wasn't the case, he was pissed off and felt that they were, he would say that they were selfish. And he just basically, to me, kind of almost like a con artist type. Like, you just think that like things are going to work out because you're in this family that seemed a lot more affluent and they have money. So like, you're going to get something out of it. And whenever he didn't get enough out of it, he was just pissed. That continued for the vast majority of my life. Now, not to say that I didn't have good times with my dad. I did have good times with my dad. He taught me a lot of things. He taught me, he was very artistic, even though he didn't value those skills in himself. Like his handwriting was like calligraphy. He was a great painter. You know, he was skilled at all the different mediums, whether it was acrylic or oil painting or whatever it was. Like, he was always so good at it, even though he didn't care about that kind of stuff at all. And he taught me about the stars. He taught me about constellations. He taught me about, what it was to have freedom. And he taught me things about how to find happiness, even in the most miserable of situations. Like, I learned a lot from him. And, unintentionally in a way almost, but like, I did pick up some things from him, and we did have, you know, some good laughs together. And there are good memories there, but there's also a lot of bad memories. I remember when things really escalated with me and my dad was when I was in high school. My house was really tumultuous. My brother was kind of in a rebellious phase, and it just kind of, anybody who's had a sibling that was acting out could probably relate to that kind of household environment where it just becomes so chaotic and focused on that one sibling, and you just kind of get lost in the fray. And you know, that's what happened to me at the time. My brother started smoking pot a lot, and I don't know, the household just became really like tense. And I always felt like I had to defend myself and I had to protect myself, and not only myself, but I also felt like I had to defend my sister, and I had to defend my mother, because my dad would always make disparaging comments about her. Like, it would go kind of like this. My mom would go to work, and, you know, she worked, there was a point where she worked nights at the hospital, and, I would come home from school. So, you know, I'd come home from high school, whatever. It was like 3-4 in the afternoon. My father would be home, and I had the chores to like clean the kitchen and do the dishes. And he would just sit in the dining room watching me do this. And he would talk, you know, a lot of smack about my mom. And I just always felt like I had to defend her. He kind of took out all of his frustrations that he couldn't take out on her, on me. And it was like a daily thing. Like, I remember getting to the point where before I would come into the house, I would have to take like a deep breath, like a deep, you know, stabilizing breath. I don't know if a lot of people can relate to that, but like, it was just really hard. I just kind of, I didn't particularly hate school, and I also didn't particularly like it, but I knew that like, I didn't want to come home a lot of times because I knew that it would become combative. Sometimes like I would catch my mom as she was leaving for work, and I would just tell her that I didn't want her to go, and she would just, you know, say, well, you know, ignore your father. And I would say that it was impossible because it truly was. Like, I would try to ignore him and not respond to anything that he would say, but then he was just like, he would get angry and he would just scream my name, and he would just be like, you know, I'm talking to you. And like, it would just get really like, you know, it would just be too much, and you have to answer. And like, he would just start this like huge argument and like, you know, start just talking down to me and talking about my mom. And like, just, it was like really tough. And I always was put into this position where I had to, you know, I felt like that I had to be on the defense. And that was really hard, to do if you're being talked down to all the time. And you're, especially at those age, I was probably like 15 or 16 years old, constantly being talked down to all the time. And I just felt like, you know, my insecurity, like my confidence took a hit a lot, in a lot more ways than even I recognized. Like, forget everybody else, but like, I, in a lot of ways that I didn't even recognize my confidence about myself and my abilities and like, you know, who I was took so many hits. But I also just felt like I had to ignore a lot. And I ignored all of my feelings because I felt that, you know, I had to defend my mom. I had to defend myself. I had to, you know, make sure that my sister didn't take his comments personally, or like, I don't know. I just always felt like I had to be on the defense for a lot of different reasons. So I just like ignored my personal feelings at the time, which I think was a mistake because it just built up. Not to mention having to deal with my brother, who at the time was really aggressive and also combative and like rebellious and bringing, you know, was bringing a lot of turmoil into the household. So like, that was really tough to deal with at the time. So it was just like this vicious firestorm. And then finally I went off to college, and I ended up coming back home. I think like in college was when I really, it all started to hit me. You know, when you ignore things for a long time and then you step away from it, you know, it allows, yes, it allows for healing, but it also allows, if you stuffed it down the whole time, it allows, you know, the quiet sets in and you start to really realize and be confronted by the things that you were ignoring. And then that can be really difficult if you don't know how to deal with it. So I remember, you know, in college going to therapy and all this stuff and like trying to sort out my feelings, but it was really hard because all of it, I was going to school out of state. Like, it was just so much change taking place at once. And it was really hard for me to like deal with a lot, all of that at once, you know? Anyway, fast forwarding, I ended up coming home, you know, and I was like, once I was done, I was like flush with cash, you know, and I had like $10,000-$11,000 in the bank. I got this, you know, job that I was working at, and I was making decent money. I didn't really have too many bills. I didn't have any bills actually, except for like my cell phone or something. And I was basically flying high. And I was living with my parents at the time. I came home, was living with my parents, and I was just, I think that at that time I was pretty irresponsible just because like I didn't have anyone telling me like, look, you know, do this or do that. But again, also it's just me and my own decision making at the time was just stupid. I was kind of like just chilling, you know what I mean? Early 20s, fresh from college, just chilling at home with the parents. And again, working and all that stuff, but like not really saving up to do anything in particular. And I think coming back home was also a mistake, but whatever. I felt like, again, I was put into a position where I felt like I had to get in the way of, you know, my dad and my sister and my dad and my mom, because there was so much turmoil in the house. It got to a point where once my dad started to make more money than my mother, and she got to a point too where she had stopped working for a bit, like, he would harass her about every little thing and complain about everything that he had to pay for. And it was just really, really verbally abusive. And I always felt like I had to step up for her. And it got to the point where I was paying literally all the bills in the house, you know, from whatever you can think of, except for the actual house. I wasn't paying for that, but I was paying for all the other bills. And just trying to take care of my mom and my sister in any way that I possibly could. But it just reached such a point where I just felt that I was constantly on edge, and it was like my anxiety really accelerated at that time. Like, it really started to become impossible to deal with my anxiety. I was having anxiety and panic attacks all the time, and I didn't even understand why. I just felt on edge all of the time. And anytime my dad was home, like, it was just so tense. It was just so, like, suffocating, and oppressive in the house. And I was constantly on edge, constantly having panic attacks. Like, I started to see a therapist again, and, like, I just couldn't deal. But everything kind of came to a head. And, you know, finally, like, my dad just pretty much left. He left us, hung us out to dry, kind of just took off and left, and never looked back after that, which was, you know, I always told my mother, you know, why don't you leave? You know, why don't you get out of the situation? Why don't you just leave? But she always had a reason not to. And she always, and I think really for her, it was just like nobody in her family had ever gotten divorced. Like, it wasn't something that she believed in, you know, even religiously. So, like, she was just kind of trapping herself in a situation just because of her own beliefs. Which, far be it from me to condemn them, but, like, again, just something that was really, really tough to deal with and watch. And in the end, my dad just took off and left, and left all of us. I remember at some point in my teenage years, we had gone to my uncle's house for Christmas, and my dad was, you know, driving us home. Like, he wanted to leave, so he, like, we're right in the middle of celebrating Christmas, basically, and he wanted to leave. Like, he wanted to go home. And so we had to pack it up and go home. And, like, him and my mom were having an argument in the car. And we were literally on the highway going home. And he just, like, stopped the car and, like, was going to leave us, like, on the side of the road in the on the highway. And that was, like, really, you know, sort of traumatizing, but there was a lot of, like, fucked up moments, you know, that I can remember. But when he finally left, for good, it was just, I thought I was going to be totally fine with it, which, I don't know. I thought I was going to be totally fine with it, you know, because I felt like, if you asked me, you know, if I would have preferred him to stay, the answer would have been no. And also, like, still to this day, it would be no, you know, because it was just a bad situation. It was kept getting worse and worse and worse. Like, the verbal abuse kept getting worse and worse and worse. I literally felt that I had to, like, defend my mom to the point where I just had to make myself more, seemingly more aggressive than I could, like, that I could possibly make myself, to almost to let him know that should he try anything physical, that I would definitely be involved and step in. Like, I felt like I had to be, like, this bigger version of myself than I actually felt on the inside, if that makes sense. And more combative and more angry so that he could, you know, kind of back down from, like, taking it to a physical point. So did I feel that it was a good thing that he left? Yes. But like, it was just, again, the quiet sets in afterwards. My mom had packed it up to go and live with my brother. My sister took off to college and I was, you know, in my own place. And it's just, it was the quiet set in and it was just too much. It was just too much to deal with, to feel so abandoned and unwanted. And for a lot of my life, or, you know, I felt so unwanted. Having this person say over and over and over again that, like, I don't want to be here. I don't want to have these, you know, be in this situation. I don't want to have kids. I wish I didn't have kids. Like, I wish I didn't have you here. Like, you're just a disappointment. Like, to hear this shit over and over and over again to the point where it was, like I said, background noise and, like, not even registering as, like, you know, who gives a fuck, you know what I mean? But then for the quiet to set in and all of that to set in, it was just really difficult. And I got to the point in my life where I just became so, like, depressed and so out of it. Like, I just couldn't deal. Like, even when everything was going pretty well in my life, like, I just, like, I had a great job, you know, I had a nice apartment. I was doing well for myself. Like, it just still, like, all that quiet, you know, and all that room for all of that noise, you know, that was just kept being stuffed down and stuffed down and stuffed down, finally coming up like vomit. sorry if that triggers anyone, but it was too much and I couldn't deal with it. And I got so depressed. I couldn't even get out of bed. I couldn't move. I couldn't do anything. I couldn't keep going to work. Like, I just literally, like, wanted to kill myself. Like, I was so close to ending it all. And my life took me down this, you know, it took me down this really dark, dark place, which I don't feel like getting into right now. But to this day, and I think that I'm doing a little bit better now than I was before, a lot better now than I was before. But to this day, I think, like, it still affects me. You know, people talk about divorce and they talk about, like, my parents, you know, got divorced when I was two. Well, here, I'll say this. When I was in college, I did Habitat for Humanity one spring break, and we slept in a church. It was in El Paso, Texas. And we, one night, we every night we'd have these different topics that we'd sit at the table and talk about and reflect on. And because we were building a home for, like, the single mom with two kids, the topic was home. And so we were all drawing our houses, and we were supposed to draw our house homes through the years and say what we remembered about them, like our first home, actually. I think we were supposed to draw our first home and see what we remembered about them. And we were going around the table, you know, and just the leader of the group was asking, you know, people to just describe the house and what they remembered, the first home that they remembered living in. And quite quickly, that discussion escalated to, you know, people talking about, like, what they remembered at that time, like, oh, my parents got divorced at that time, you know, like, my parents got divorced when I was three, blah, blah, blah. And they started to cry. I remember, you know, people started to cry about it. And it was, like, so weird and surreal to me because they were saying things like, you know, well, everything was fine now. Like, you know, I don't even really know my biological father like that. My stepdad is great, or my stepmom is great. You know, I don't know why I'm crying. But every time they would mention it, even it was such a, like, a trigger point for them that they just, like, most of the people around the room, literally, like, I think it was just me and one other person that our parents were still together at that time. And, like, everybody also started crying. And it was just really eye-opening for me because you think that, you know, your parents got divorced when you were two or three, that, you know, you're like 19, 20, that you would be completely over it, especially if you're, you know, you have a relationship with your step parents or whatever. But it's something and you just never gets over it. And I think it's even worse, you know, dare I say, I don't even want to say that it's even worse, but for me, I feel that, you know, the situation, I think that, you know, I keep thinking that I am over it. I keep thinking, you know, I haven't talked to my, I haven't seen or talked, spoken to my father since I was about 25. Just right after my birthday, he left. And when he left, again, I was 25. I can take care of myself, you know, and it's not like he left when I was a baby. He was there my entire life, you know, and it shouldn't be a big deal, or that's how I feel. Like, the guy wasn't a good guy, and he's not in my life anymore. But I'm 29 now, and I feel that I should be over it.
Interrupting the episode to introduce our reoccurring segment, The Worst, where I tell you about the worst thing that's happened to me since the last time I recorded. So let's get into it. The fucking worst. So the worst thing that's happened since the last episode is that my best work friend, and if you work in an office or something like that, you might have a work friend that you consider to be, you know, super close to you, and you look forward to working with them every day because you get to joke with them and laugh with them and they make the day go by easier. Well, I have one of those, and my best work friend actually called me and told me that they would not be coming to work, and that they were kind of quarantining because they suspected that somebody on their son's basketball team was feeling a little ill, and so they went to go get tested. I myself have been tested recently, and I tested negative for COVID, but, you know, my work friend was like, yeah, they're going to go get tested and they're going to be quarantined until they get their test results back. So I will have to face Monday and Tuesday and however long it takes without my best work friend, which will make the day go by a lot slower, and it'll just be kind of sucky. So that's pretty much the worst thing, and honestly, it's not that bad, shockingly so, but still, like, if you knew what kind of environment I worked in, you would probably feel sorry for me, because it can be pretty tough to get through the day without some kind of levity and some kind of, also just, like, another person there that, like, I feel like I can rely on. There's not many people that I feel that I can rely on and that understand, you know, how to handle high pressure situations. And without my work friend there, it will be a lot harder to manage a lot of the moving parts. So yeah, that's the worst thing. And now back to the episode.
But the tough reality is that I'm not over it. And every time I see a father-daughter scene, you know, that's heartwarming in a movie or a TV show, sometimes I burst into tears. And, you know, when I realize that somebody who's known me for the vast majority of my life, from start to finish, could just walk away and never question where I am or ask for me, or just literally walk out without looking back, makes me feel worthless. And that, you know, is just something that's lasting. And I also feel like, because, you know, I'm never going to see him again, it feels like he died. And although, again, he's a horrible person, he's also my father. Do you know what I mean? Like, he's also my father, and I have all these memories with him, good and bad and ugly. And the next time to know and to realize that the next time that I'll hear from him, not from him, about him, is when he's dead, is a tough thing to swallow. And it makes me feel, I understand that, you know, now, it took me a while to understand, but I understand now that what I feel is grief, and grief doesn't go away. Grief is lifelong. You just kind of, you never stop grieving. You just learn to live with it. You know, when someone dies, you don't just get over it. You learn to live with it. And I think that's the point where I am, is kind of just living with it. And, you know, you're always going to have these periods of sadness when you're reminded of this or that, you know, and that's what I'm coming to realize, but it's still really hard, and it's still really tough to know that, again, you know, somebody that's known you for so long and knows so much could just quite literally walk away without a care, and doesn't know if I'm dead in a ditch somewhere, if, you know, I'm okay, if I'm not okay, like, it doesn't, to know that that doesn't matter to him, you know. And not just about me, but also about my brother and sister and mother and all that stuff. But like, just to know that on a personal level, like, just really sucks. So every time I'm reminded of it, it just, you know, it hurts. It's like, it's, you know, it's a lot of pain, that I've had to deal with. But also in the same respect, every achievement, every whatever, you know, I'm like, well, I made it through this thing, or I learned this thing, and I didn't need you there to do it. And that's good. That makes me feel good in some ways. I don't know if that's good or bad, but whatever. Anyways, yeah. It hurts. It's probably, again, it's always going to hurt. It's changed the way that I, you know, even I've never been the best person in relationships for multiple reasons, but like, it's changed the way that I've viewed relationships. It's changed everything. It's changed so much, you know, it's affected me in a lot of ways, and it is what it is. And I would say, dear dad, you know, not that he'd be listening to this, but I'm going to say it like he is. Dear dad, everything that you did really hurt. I wish I knew why I was never enough. And I wish I could have been enough. I sometimes wish I didn't exist at all, because then things would be easier. And I know that I'm just this person, this thing that you left behind, because it's easier. And I've often realized that I inherited that sort of trait that you have of running away from things that just seem too big and too tough to handle. I too run away from things and wish things away. And I wish that I wasn't one of the things that you wished away or you ran away from, but it is what it is. I don't want to speak to you again. I don't want to see you. I don't want to, you know, reinvite you and your chaos into my life. It's not my desire, but I do wish things could have been different, or at least I wish that I hadn't been there at all. Dear Dad, I guess I'm just sorry that I wasn't enough. And that's it. The end. Yeah, there you have it. So guys, I just want to say that, you know, a reminder, you know, that you can follow me on Twitter, SD_anxious, that's S as in stress, D as in depressed_anxious on Twitter. I love to hear from you guys, and you can tell me your stories about your fathers, good or bad. It's up to you. But I'm always interested to hear from you guys, but especially if you relate to anything that I've said. I'd love to hear from you, so feel free to DM me or at me on Twitter. And also, of course, you can go to the website, stressdepressedanxious.com. Leave me a voice message, sign up for the newsletter, the blog. Let me know your thoughts and your feelings, and I'd love to reach out to you guys and talk to you as well. I hope that you guys have a day, month, week, year free of stress, depression, and anxiety. As always, I love you, and until next time, goodbye.
I wish life was like